Into sports.
20 yards out, Urch to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Hello there, Joe Malloy with you this evening. So day one of Cheltenham, and Rachel Blackmore has made history today aboard Honeysuckle, trained by Henry de Bromhead down in Waterford. We're going to hear from Henry very shortly. Been a long year, totally different thing for you after 8 o'clock for lots of businesses, as you all know. We're going to check in with the owners of some of Ireland's finest sporting pubs after 8 o'clock, the likes of Billy Keane down in Listowel, the owners of the Piper's Corner and the Boar's Head if you're up Dublin way. Dan McDonald will be on the football show, Champions League evening ahead, amongst other things. 53106 is the text number. We're at Off the Ball on Twitter. Do get in touch. Richie McCormack, evening.
Evening, Joe.
Nathan Murphy, hello to you.
How's it going?
Very well. So, historic day at Cheltenham. Star of the show was Tipperary's finest, Rachel Blackmore, winner of the champion hurdle above Honeysuckle. First female to win a championship race at Cheltenham. And it just underlines what an extraordinary career Rachel Blackmore has had. Daughter of a dairy farmer and a teacher, not of racing stock. We are 10 years on now from her first ever win as an amateur in Thurles at 21. Turned professional 2015. Almost nothing to lose was her sense. You know, she wasn't getting enough rides as things were, so she said, let's give this a go. The Henry de Bromhead connection starts in 2017. Her first Cheltenham winner was 2 years ago, and now today another landmark afternoon for the now 31-year-old, and it's all fairly phenomenal. Nathan, she lets her actions do the talking more so than words. For someone who hates the limelight, she keeps grabbing it.
She sure does. She is a sensation. Reluctant hero, it's fair to say. When she's been on the show, you can tell it's not where she is most comfortable. She's clearly most comfortable riding winner after winner after winner. And you talk about her background there. Considering she turned pro 6 years ago, off the back of a very average amateur career, reading an interview with Patrick Mullins, who was her housemate and is obviously very much of horse racing royalty, that at 9 stone, she was too light. At 26, she was too old. Yet, as you say, she had nothing to lose, decided to turn professional. And the brilliant thing about racing is that it is a meritocracy. So she has got the opportunities because of how brilliant she is. And she is blazing a trail that is going to be followed by many, many young female jockeys, because the way the sport is going, the way genetics are going, that men are getting taller and heavier, and you would expect there are going to be many more opportunities for female jockeys coming through over the coming years. And you've quite a few icons there, you've got quite a few inspirations there in the industry right now, but Rachel Blackmore is going toe-to-toe with the very best, and more often than not coming out on top. And today, to win the champion hurdle in such brilliant fashion, but what a horse, Honeysuckle as well, the success they've had together. One of those moments where you're looking, going, God, imagine if there was 120,000 people there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll talk to Henry de Bromhead, obviously trains out of Waterford. And I know he was on with Jer and Johnny a couple of years ago, or maybe not a couple of years ago even, maybe late last year. And he was talking about how he was in a taxi with Eddie O'Leary of Jigginstown around Aintree back in kind of 2017 territory. And Eddie knew that Henry de Bromhead was looking for a new rider. And he said, you should try Rachel, she's really good. And she had ridden a few times for him at that stage. And you know, he kind of went along with it. And in his own words, it just took off, just started winning and didn't stop winning. And here they are 4 years later. So looking forward to having Henry de Bromhead on in a while. We're trying to get Rachel on as well, but she's probably busy. You know, there's a lot going on. Day one, day two to come. And she's in the first race tomorrow, and good chance in that as well. So let's kick off the news round. It is, as ever, with thanks to our good friends at Gillette. And Richie, you're starting with the news of the day.
Yeah, Rachel Blackmore making history on the opening day of this year's Cheltenham Festival. The Tipperary native became the first female jockey to win the champion hurdle when 11-10 favourite Honeysuckle came home 6.5 lengths ahead of Sharjah. Last year's winner, Epatant, was third. Blackmore says a win like this afternoon's was beyond her comprehension when she started in the sport.
This was never even a dream. It was so far from what I ever thought could happen in my life. To be in Cheltenham, riding the winner of a champion hurdle, it's just so far removed from anything I ever thought could be possible. You know, so maybe there's a lesson in that for everyone out there. But yeah, it's incredible. You can't do it without getting on the right horses. I've been extremely lucky in that sense, and getting, you know, linked up with a yard like Henry de Bromhead, you know, you need to be riding those horses. And yeah, that's a massive part of any jockey's career. You know, being in the right place at the right time and getting linked up with the right yard.
I was thinking as the day started, and Appreciate It won the first as the heavy favourite and won comprehensively for Willie Mullins, and then Shishkin won the Arkle for Nicky Henderson, again heavy favourite and won comfortably. I was just thinking, Nathan, there's no way all the favourites are going to win comfortably here, and obviously Honeysuckle was the one we were all really looking out for, but geez, if anybody didn't catch the race, and we haven't said so, won so comprehensively as well. It wasn't like this was a close run thing, it was a storming victory.
The bookies took one hell of a beating today, Joe.
Yeah, I think they'll be okay.
I'm sure I think they'll be just fine. It's just so relentless, Cheltenham, because if you do get Rachel on, it'll be, how are you celebrating? And we have these conversations every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of Cheltenham with the winning jockeys and trainers, and it's, and I'm not. I'm sitting at home having a cup of tea, and I got to go and do it all again. And even then on a Friday, if you talk to the Gold Cup winner, it's probably, oh no, I'm back home riding in Nace tomorrow.
Yes, I'm just going home and not eating food. That's the plan.
Mm.
Any other results from today you want to bring us, Rich?
Yeah, plenty. Two of the day's other grade ones, both won, as you say, by odds-on favourites. Appreciate It won the Supreme Novices Hurdle for jockey Paul Townend and trainer Willie Mullins, while Nico de Boinville was aboard the Nicky Henderson train Shishkin for victory in the Arkle. Jack Kennedy ended the day as leading jockey with a pair of wins. 11-1 shot Black Tears claimed the Mayor's Hurdle, while Galvin won the National Hunt Challenge Cup. Elsewhere, the 80-1 outsider Jeff Kidder won the Boodles Juvenile Handicap Hurdle, and Vintage Clouds were back the years by winning the Ultima Handicap Chase at a price of 28-1.
Now, forget about us and the wider public. CJ Stander blindsided his own teammates today.
Yeah, he rocked Irish rugby this morning by announcing his decision to retire from rugby. The 31-year-old back row says he did a stock take of his life during lockdown, adding that he came to the realisation that his commitment to rugby has started to take an unfair toll on his family. Stander is likely to win a 51st and final Ireland cap in Saturday's Six Nations finale against England at the Aviva. Since arriving from the Bulls in 2012, he's made 150 appearances for Munster. The majority of those games, and indeed the 2017 Lions tour, were spent in the company of Peter O'Mahony, and his fellow Munster back row paid a glowing tribute to Stander this afternoon.
Very shocked, obviously, when he told us all last night. Obviously didn't see it coming, I don't think anyone did, but you know, he explained his reasons, you know, and his reasons are very, very valid ones, you know, very noble ones in my opinion, and you know, everyone will respect his decision. You know, the man has given an incredible amount to not just Ireland but Munster as well. Limerick, you know, incredible teammate, and you know, he's got to give a bit back to his family now, who have sacrificed a huge amount for him. So, look, we'll hopefully make you know, this week and the couple of months or 3 or 4 months that he's remaining left to play with us and me, certainly as special as we can.
And just a second question about CJ, if you don't mind. I mean, you shared a Munster changing room in Ireland, one Alliance changing room. What's made him kind of stand out as a teammate amongst the people that you hang around?
Look, his selflessness, his professionalism. You know, from the day he arrived in Munster, he did his best to buy in to our culture, and you know, now he's creating bits of our culture. You know, he's a person who, you know, I'd always think, you know, who do kids look up to? You know, you want to be someone who the young fellas look up to, and you know, I suppose it's a nice compliment to give someone that, you know, there's kids around, probably not just Ireland, around the British Isles and beyond, who want to be like CJ. you know, which is a huge compliment. He's an incredible family man, which obviously he's spoken about and how important that is to him. So, you know, an incredible friend and obviously an incredible teammate, but more importantly, an incredible friend. And, you know, I can't say much more.
It's amazing. The tone of surprise was across the board. Johnny Sexton was speaking as well today, and he was saying that he was called into a meeting with Andy Farrell yesterday, and this was about the last news he could have predicted. Totally blindsided him. So, massive shock for all the players. Standard's only 31. He is turning down, Nathan, big money over the next 2-3 years. I mean, still would be very much in demand, either centrally contracted here in Ireland, or if he wanted to go and play in France for a couple of years, you know, he could do very well for himself. And he cited family reasons. I was reading his partner and child are back in South Africa, or certainly were for the lockdown. I think they're back there currently. So that's a big part of the decision making, I'm sure. And off he goes. Be a huge loss for Munster in particular. I mean, Caelan Doris, hopefully in a green shirt, steps forward very soon. But for Munster, a massive part of what they're about the last couple of years, to say the least.
I think everyone was shell-shocked to see that this morning, because he's there playing last Sunday, and you're planning on CJ Stander being a mainstay of that Irish back row for the next 3-4 years, certainly probably being a starter come the next World Cup. It's hard to be critical when you read the statement and how difficult it's been for him over the last year, with his family spending a good chunk of their time in South Africa. And you just have to listen to the warmth of the tributes. He has given absolutely everything over the last 8 or 9 years. He's bought into everything that Munster is about. And as Peter O'Mahony said, taken it to another level then as to what Munster are about, and a most worthy wearer of that Munster number 8 jersey. But it's very short notice for everybody involved. It does seem as though that players only found out last night. When did Munster in Ireland find out about this? Because, well, straight away you wonder, does he play this weekend? I know he said he's available if there's a summer tour as well, but he's not now going to be around, I guess, because the Six Nations, the money angle of it is so important that they will have to go with their best team against England, and he's going to be a part of that. But for Munster suddenly having to find a figure like CJ Stander at short notice, it's probably an impossible task.
Blackmore, credit to the sport, quiet assassin and tough as old boots in the best possible way, says Graham. Lots of messages coming in on Rachel Blackmore today. Richie, unusual story, I think. Leo Cullen declining a 2-year contract.
Yeah, he signed a new 1-year deal to stay on as head coach with the province. As you say, he was offered a 2-year deal but requested a 1-year rolling contract. By contrast, Stuart Lancaster, the senior coach, backs coach Felipe Contepomi and scrum coach Robin McBride all signed new 2-year deals today. But Cullen saying his commitment to the cause and to the province remains undimmed.
Yeah, good to see Lancaster signed a 2-year deal. That's kind of crept in there. There's obviously some speculation that premiership clubs and elsewhere were sniffing around and probably interested in his services. What's your read on Cullen taking 1-year deal as opposed to 2, when everyone in this precarious world grabs the extra year if they can, Nathan?
I would have loved if at the press conference, when he was asked about 1 year, he just lifted one eyebrow and said, "Have you seen Ireland play lately?" It seems to be for personal reasons, he's saying, as to whether he has something else planned, whether there's other coaching offers in other parts of the world, and maybe his children at a certain age where he's decided, if I want to travel at some stage, this will be the opportunity. But you're dead right. In the current situation within Irish rugby, within world rugby, to be offered the chance to sign a 2-year contract, to have that sort of security, is very difficult to turn down, but obviously shows the confidence that Leo Cullen has in himself.
Champions League this evening, Rich.
Yeah, Man City looking to secure a place in the quarterfinals tonight. They play the home leg of their last 16 tie with Borussia Mönchengladbach in the neutral city of Budapest. City hold a 2-0 first leg lead, and kickoff is at 8 o'clock. And it could be a nervy night for Real Madrid tonight. They play hosts to Atalanta with just a 1-0 first leg advantage to their name. Kickoff there also coming up at 8 p.m.
Yeah, no Eden Hazard in the team from Madrid. He's injured again. Apparently Zidane, I was just hearing, I hadn't realised, he swears all the time in press conferences. Did you know this? He just swears like a sailor in press conferences, and had some choice words about Eden Hazard's latest injury. So that's what's going on over in Madrid. Meanwhile, the good news keeps on coming for Stephen Kenny.
Yeah, Adam Ida officially ruled out of this month's World Cup qualifiers with Serbia and Luxembourg. His Norwich manager, Daniel Farke, says the striker must see another specialist regarding his hernia operation and possibly faces surgery. Republic of Ireland manager Stephen Kenny names his squad on Thursday and is already without Aaron Connolly, Darren Randolph, John Egan and James McLean, to name but a few.
Yeah, James McCarthy as well. Probably some others we're not thinking of. That's a mounting injury list, is how we describe that, Nathan.
The squad has been named on Thursday. I think the expectation is that James McLean will actually make it. He was on Instagram last week, put a picture up of Ireland training and said, "See you soon, boys." And it was always going to be tight whether he'd be available, so don't be surprised if McLean is there. I was saying on OTBAM yesterday, the issue for Stephen Kenny is he still has lots of options, almost too many options. He's going into the game against Serbia, which is 8 days away, where you're looking at the starting 11, and probably Enda Stevens and Conor Howerton are the only two players who are nailed on to start. I think Seamus Coleman will play as well, but there's still a debate whether Coleman, Doherty or both of them together. And you're going in with 11 that, again, have probably never played a match together for such a tough test away in Serbia. And who's going to score the goals? The options now are Callum Robinson through the middle, James Collins, who started the last game against Bulgaria, experienced, but has he got that quality at that level? Or do you go back to Shane Long? And even of those three players, if they haven't been starting club games even in the last few weeks. Callum Robinson has barely played for West Brom in the last couple of months. So it's a very similar conversation to the one we left off in November, it seems.
Yes, it is. The SOFCO series then, Richie, this is hockey between Ireland and Great Britain at the moment.
Yeah, ending the week with great credit for the Ireland women's team. They ended that series in a tie with the Olympic gold medalists. The sides drew one apiece in their third and final meeting this afternoon in Belfast. Both of those goals coming in the final quarter, and Roisin Upton was the Irish scorer this afternoon. So a win apiece and a draw for those two sides. Confirmed today that this season's Pro 14 final will be played at the RDS. Leinster will face Munster at the Ballsbridge venue on March 27th with a 5 p.m. kickoff. It's going to be a busy time for both provinces. Leinster will be back at the RDS the following Friday to take on Toulon in the last 16 of the Heineken Champions Cup. Munster's game with Toulouse will be the following evening at Thomond Park. Welford Road, meanwhile, hosts Connacht's Challenge Cup last 16 tie with Leicester on Saturday, April 3rd. That's going to have an 8 p.m. start the following evening. Ulster will take on Harlequins that game at the Twickenham Stoop.
Yeah, we'll have to see how strong the two teams are on the 27th in that Pro 14 final, with Sunday just gone at Murrayfield, followed by England, and then you have the Pro 14 final quickly followed by knockout stages, Heineken Champions Cup. So something has to give if you're the likes of, I guess, Johnny Sexton, Nathan, and any other number of frontliners. They're not going to play 4 weeks on the bounce into a Heineken Champions Cup knockout stage match.
No, and it's not even just the last 16. You win that match, you're playing again the very next week in the Champions Cup in the quarterfinal. And Leinster, as we know, are an incredibly tough side of the draw. Munster have got to lose first time out. So it's a real shame once again for the Pro 16 that is a constant battering ram of accusations around the mediocrity that we see in it sometimes. So you would feel a Leinster-Munster final could have sort of saved the day. But again, maybe it's the right thing. Maybe the players who have gone through the entire season while all the internationals have been away, have been there on those tough Friday nights when there's nobody watching, that actually they deserve that reward of getting their day out.
Yeah, no, they do. But the viewing public would like a belter.
Well, Joey Carberry will play. Joey will play.
Yeah, it's true. Very good again by all accounts at the weekend. So he started as well, if you missed that, with all the international stuff away from the limelight.
He was involved in everything as well. Yeah. That Munster did on the good side of the ball. So he's coming back and coming back in form. It's nice to see that there's, granted we have to have a pinch of salt with this and kind of take into account the stage we're at in the season and the opposition they're playing against, but there doesn't seem to be much in the way of ring rust on Carberry, which is great.
No, it's true. Even that he's just moving freely, that's all you want at this stage. So wood touched and everything crossed and all that, it continues in that vein. So good news on Rui Patricio last night, because that didn't look good for a while.
Yeah, it was really, really worrying last night. Wolves goalkeeper Rui Patricio didn't require hospital treatment after suffering a head injury during last night's Premier League defeat to Liverpool. The Portuguese player received extensive attention from medics before being gingerly carried off after colliding with the knee of his teammate Connor Cody. Patricio is recovering at home but is still being closely monitored.
More rugby?
Yeah, World Rugby announcing a new international women's competition today called the WXV Tournament. 16 teams will be involved, with games being spread across three tiers. The competition, which will begin in 2023, is being called a landmark moment by World Rugby Chairman Bill Beament.
That's international sides, I presume, Rich, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yep. Now, very interesting news. We have the Belgian League, we have the Dutch League, and now we have
the Benelux League. Yeah. Belgian clubs have unanimously agreed to pursue a combined league with Dutch clubs. The proposed Benelux will be home to 18 top clubs from the Jupiler Pro League in Belgium and Holland's Eredivisie. The current television deals in both countries run out in 2025, and backers hope the venture can generate in excess of €450 million in rights fees. Anderlecht head coach Vincent Kompany and Feyenoord forwards coach Robin van Persie have been among the most vocal backers of the proposal.
Pretty interesting, Nathan, isn't it? Almost like a Pro 14-esque solution to this European Super League, which is obviously, you know, threatening away in the background.
Well, this has been talked about for years, often with Scottish sides thrown into the mix as well. They've obviously missed the boat with this one. It makes total sense because you see with the Dutch league, by and large, you have the same two or three teams dominating every year. Both leagues are probably similar in a way in that they are now feeder leagues. You watch the best of Holland, you watch the best of the Belgian sides in the Europa League or in the group stage of the Champions League, and they've had a lot of exciting young attacking players who you know are going to end up going to some decent clubs for 25-30 million. So financially it obviously makes sense. There's no great issues in terms of infrastructure or being able to get around the place. So yeah, this will be the start of it, I suspect. There'll be many more leagues looking and watching and seeing how this goes.
Yeah, the Atlantic one, you mentioned, Nathan, about the Scottish leagues, etc., missing the boat. I think it's they're two completely separate buoyancy aids that they're looking towards now, because what I've been spoken about before, there was grand plans, I know, for a, you know, a general Europe-wide league that involved the so-called lesser tiers from, I guess, the northern part of Europe. But the Atlantic League is still something that's being spoken about in very confident terms by those that are looking to build it, so that would involve Scandinavian sides, Scottish sides, and potentially Irish sides. But it kind of shows you the mess that we're in here at home, that we can't get an all-Ireland league going when the prospect of a Belgian and an Eredivisie league coming together seems to be progressing without much of a hiccup so far. But the idea of regional leagues is something, positively or negatively, that we're going to have to get used to over the coming 10 years.
Does anyone want them? I understand the financial implications. It'll be driven by TV revenue.
Yeah, but that's what but that's
would
that's
you prefer
what
to watch
now.
Shamrock Rovers against Bohemians or yeah. Shamrock Rovers against Molde?
But this is what it is now. Essentially what they're selling, and this began in 1991-92 when they were shipping around the idea of a Premier League, they were selling a product to television companies. They weren't selling a league. They were selling something that could fill X number of hours, bring in, you know, a certain amount of revenue in terms of advertisement, and bring in sponsors. They weren't selling the prospect of the football pyramid being completely maintained in each country and everybody.
But at least it was built around rivalries, whereas the one thing we're trying to break up, even with the expansion plans for the Champions League, I'm sure I'm in the minority. I saw the example being given of, well, would you prefer to watch Burnley against Crystal Palace or would you prefer to watch Ajax against Benfica?
But like the thing about it is,
probably watch Burnley Crystal Palace.
they've found out that sports, and this is across the boards in rugby, and you only have to look at the way CBC are throwing their money around. They've discovered that sport is an absolute evergreen product that will never go away, is constantly there in the calendar. You don't have to, you know, pay for actors. The thing is fairly self-sufficient in terms of once you pay your rights fees, everything else is looked after by the people that are governing it. So it's a big money generator for TV companies and for media companies as a whole. It's not really that intensive in terms of what they have to do with it once it's on air. They couldn't give a monkey's who's playing who in it, as long as they have something to
show.
There
you go, kids.
Three times of a week. Like it's all about the media companies from here on in. It's all about who can sell it to Amazon. It's all about who can sell it and put it behind a paywall and make the most money out of it. Your nice little cozy rivalries between your local rivals, unfortunately, are going to matter less and less to the people making the decisions down the line. It's pretty bleak.
When he puts it like that, Joe, actually, it sounds very positive.
Sold. Amazing.
Suddenly sports broadcasting is the safest gig in the world.
We're going to be okay. There's a text in from Jerry. Lads, for all the talk of missing the crowds today, watch Cheltenham. Didn't miss the crowd that much. Just me?
You don't really need the social tent that they had at ITV's racing coverage, which, you know, is covered by Virgin Media. Like the going back with Matt Chapman and some other fake-toothed bloke in a suit talking to punters is something that we can happily live without, I think. And people gurning to camera and people in really ill-fitting check suits are something that we'd happily leave in the past.
Poof. Wow.
I think Matt's teeth are just very clean.
They've been done.
It's not really the point of Jerry's text, Matt's teeth, but that's where we're wrapping this up. On the 15th of March last year, 8,000 pubs across Ireland closed their doors, and as we mark the 1 year anniversary this week in Off the Ball, in association with Guinness, we're celebrating the people and the stories that make our nation's pubs great as we look forward to their safe reopening tonight. We're giving away a €250 voucher to spend on a staycation or a pub lunch when things open up again. To be in with a chance of winning, just identify our mystery voice who describes what happens when someone knocks over his pint.
I would be swinging punches at that guy.
Yeah. Text your name and answer, 53106 for 30 cents, and we'll announce the winner after the show. It's all thanks to Guinness, raising the bar. Drink responsibly, visit drinkaware.ie. I hope the pubs reopen again soon, Nathan, so people can stop sending photos of bar counters with lots of pints of Guinness in every WhatsApp group in the world.
I was listening to your panel when you streamed it earlier on, and I had a real longing. I was thinking back, Joe, to my last proper night out just over a year ago.
Oh, yeah.
Cheltenham preview up in the Camden Palace up on Camden Street. And afterwards, myself, Johnny Ward, and Stephen Hunt said, we go for a quiet pint in Devitt's, walk in, who's at the bar? Totally unexpected, who's at the bar? But Kevin Kilbane and Brianne. So,
I would have said that was totally expected, to be honest.
Well, possibly.
At that stage,
is the last time I had a proper night out. For the full 2 hours we were there, Johnny Ward spoke in a Brian Clough accent.
Wow.
For the entire two hours. This was the first time Brianne had met Johnny Ward. So a year on, they're still over in Canada. I suspect she's still wondering what the hell happened. A good 2 hours of Brian Clough.
Did you? I mean,
magical nights are gone.
You didn't appreciate it while you had it. That's the point of that story. So next up, we are going to get a review of what's happened at Cheltenham this afternoon from John Duggan. And we will talk to, presumably, very, very happy Henry de Bromhead. That's on the way. My thanks to Nathan and to Richie.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.